We'll continue our discussion with Catherine Albrecht when we come back in your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine, you were talking about companies that read these tags before we go to phone calls.
Yeah, talking about the infrastructure, if we get to a point where these things are appearing in our shoes, where they're implanted in our flesh, who's going to read all of this? And there's been a pretty disturbing development in that the companies that make those anti-theft portal devices in store doorways that are now in place at millions of retail locations around the world. Those two companies are called Checkpoint Systems and Sensormatic, which is owned by Tyco, a big scandal-ridden company. Anyway, what we've learned is that those companies are quietly migrating those systems, which read little anti-theft tags that are pretty harmless, into RFID reader devices. And what that means is that as you walk through one of those portals, even into a store, that portal could be scanning you, could be reading the contents of your purse or your backpack right through the leather, and could be inventorying everything you're wearing and carrying, and, of course, identifying you as well. So there is a very short-term, I think, immediate risk that we're facing right now, which is that these reader devices and the infrastructure to do this is quietly being built up all around us. It's almost as though, you know, you're circling the wagons here. And we're going to wake up one day, and when they do finally say, you have to have one of these in your driver's license, in your passport, et cetera, the reader devices to read them will already be in place unless we stop it.
All right, to the phones we go. First time caller line, where are you calling from? You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, my name is Jeff, calling from Texas.
Sure, Jeff, go ahead.
Very interesting, Catherine. I first congratulate you on keeping the public informed as much as you've been doing on this stuff. Excellent work. These devices you're talking about that being implanted, possibly in shoes, clothing, things of that nature, how is it possible to detect those on our own where we would be able to remove them or destroy them some way, shape, or form?
Wonderful question. And by the way, in terms of putting them in clothing, we know that Benetton had planned to do it. We stopped that, but my co-author Liz McIntyre and I attended a conference last year where we actually saw them embedded in Calvin Klein clothing labels, Abercrombie & Fitch hang tags, and basically they've got a form that they can weave right into your clothing. We have pictures of that up at our website at spychips.com, spychips with an S.
Yeah.
So the problem is, here you may actually be wearing a pair of shoes or an item of clothing that has one of these tags. As far as detecting it goes, the reader devices to read these things start at about $2,000. So that's a serious impediment for most of us. Even if you bought a reader device, these tags operate at different frequencies, and most of the readers will only read one of those frequencies. So there's three or four different standard frequencies, and you'd have to buy three or four different readers to even read them. On top of that, there's a third piece, which is there has to be the right protocol or computer language, and if someone wants to hide it, put it at a frequency that's uncommon, put it at a protocol or a computer language that no one knows, they could actually get away with putting it in there and you wouldn't find it. Now, we had this happen to us in Germany at the Future Store, which is the industry's showpiece for RFID technology. We've got a whole 12-page tour of that Future Store on our website at spychips.com. You can check it out. But one of the things that they had done there without telling the public is they had hidden RFID tags in the store frequent shopper card. So they had issued 10,000 of these things with an RFID tag hidden inside. There's no way you could have seen it there. It was a plain plastic card like any other card. And the only reason we found it is because I was doing a demonstration, and I was showing things like Pantene shampoo and Gillette razor blades and Kraft Philadelphia cream cheese with RFID tags on them. I was holding them up to a reader and showing the image on a PowerPoint screen behind me. And somebody, just as a joke, said, well, next they're going to be tagging us. And they held up a card from the Metro Future store, and sure enough, a number appeared. And in fact, we had to take that card and get it x-rayed in order to find the chip inside of it. We have pictures of that in our book that comes out this October called Spy Chips. But basically, we found that they had hidden those. And when we did a little poking around and research, and we show all of this on our website, We found that IBM, which was behind a lot of this, had referred to the people of Rheinberg, Germany, where they did this, as guinea pigs. So they're literally testing this out invisibly. Now, so the as far as finding it, I mean, you'd have to x-ray it or somehow visually see it in most cases, unless you want to invest thousands of dollars in a research lab.
Right.
As far as destroying it, as we talked about in the last segment, you can put it in the microwave, but
right.
I do not recommend it, because when we put tags in the microwave for just a few seconds, they caught fire. So that's not a reasonable solution for your Calvin Klein clothing. It's probably not a reasonable solution for your tires, because Michelin is now embedding these into the rubber of tires, and you really can't fit that into the microwave.
Yeah. And it's not in money yet, but it's about to be, or they've already started to, I know they got little detection strips in money.
Well, what we know now, the Hitachi Mu chip that they want to put into money that's too tiny to spot if they were to do it, that's actually too expensive to put into currency at this point. It probably wouldn't be cost-effective unless it was on a trial basis, simply to test it out, see if it would work, or see how people would figure it out. We do know, though, that there were a couple of reports that both the Bank of Japan and the central bank that controls or of Europe that controls the euro were both in talks with Hitachi about potentially tagging currency with the Mu chip. Since that time, both governments have said that they do not discuss security issues with the public, and that they would not be talking about whether or not they're doing it. So we don't have any evidence that they have, other than we know that they've been in talks about it.
So once they started putting it in money, you could, if you had concerns, I don't know why, but if you had concerns about your money being tracked, you could possibly microwave your money and destroy the little chip without really destroying the money.
Well, here's the problem. The reason they want to put this in currency is to detect counterfeit money. And the idea is that unless it had a tag, it wouldn't be valid. So putting killing the tags on your money would be akin to throwing it in the fireplace.
Making your money invalid.
Exactly. So really, not only is there an incentive for them to put it on there, but they've built in an incentive for us to leave it live.
All right.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate you being on the program with us. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Sam calling from Knoxville.
Hi, Sam. Go ahead,
sir. I was just wanting to actually kind of make a reference to a previous show you had a couple of weeks ago and bring it into light. With these tracking devices or these tags, would it be possible for these tags to emit like a frequency within the body or some type of that? Because, see, a few weeks ago, George, you had a show with a guy on that was talking about mind control. Now, with the use of frequencies through the power grid and stuff of this nature. Now, the reason why I'm trying to make a comparison there is because you were talking about how people would start to worship the beast.
Right.
And she stated that, your guest stated that she didn't really see how people would start worshiping, their credit cards or stuff with these tags in it. But if they started using mind control with these devices and forcing us to worship them, would that be possible? Would it be possible for these things to emit this type of frequency or a frequency like that outwards?
Catherine, what do you think?
Well, the RFID tags that they're envisioning putting into money and into consumer products are actually they're pretty simple technology. They don't really have sophisticated ways to emanate much of anything at this point. I think, when I think about the worship component, I think there's probably a much easier way to do that, and that is the fact that the world is really awash with problems right now, and there's such a tremendous spiritual hunger on the part of the world's people now that we've pretty much eliminated God from our lives. And, we've eliminated God from our health care, we've eliminated God from the raising of our children, we've eliminated God from so many different things where people, I think, really have that deep-rooted need to be connected to their Creator, no matter what your faith.
Right.
So I think that the world is ripe at this point in time for
manipulation.
For manipulation, and it doesn't have to be technological manipulation, but simply for psychological manipulation.
Right.
I think someone came along, as the Bible explains to us, that the Antichrist will promise us peace. The Antichrist will eliminate crime. I mean, this technology can certainly eliminate crime. You put a reader everywhere, you put cameras everywhere, and crime will probably drop.
We'll all be walking around like C-3PO.
Well, yeah, but we'll all be sort of part of this big surveillance grid. And so I think if you can tell people that, that safety and security is coupled with spiritual safety and security, if you can give them that message, I think the whole world will fall like ripe fruit into the hands of any leader.
Yeah, well, especially now with terrorist attacks and everybody's scared about terrorists and all of this nature, and I mean, it would be a perfect opportunity for them to implement something else, kind of like the Patriot Act that they did, you know, in the name of security. Now the FBI watches everybody and can do it without, you know, just do it anytime they want. They don't even have to have a court order or a judge to say they can. And, you know, so, yeah, I agree with that. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, appreciate you being part of the program. Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hi, this is Mark calling from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Mark.
I read an article in the paper this weekend about the utility companies, the electric companies, being able to offer internet access through your plug outlets, your electrical outlets. If that's the case, or if that's a technology that they will be able to use in the future, then wouldn't they be able to sell you a lamp with a RFID reader built in already, like a wireless router, and when you plug it in to the outlet to get electricity, it would have the capability of reading inside of your house?
You absolutely could. And in fact, you know, when people talk about how are they going to get these reader devices everywhere, I think back to the turn of the 20th century when they, you know, right around the time they were introducing electricity, the thought that there would be an electrical grid canvassing the nation and the world, the thought that every room where human beings inhabit would have, you know, multiple power outlets and the stuff streaming all around us would have been inconceivable. But all of that power that we've run into homes and buildings and schools and offices, all of that power can turn into transmission lines. And that's an extraordinary thought, because it means that any power outlet, as you said, could turn into an RFID reader almost instantly. I was at a conference in Europe where they were showing the last Star Wars movie, and it was, you know, full color, big screen, it was fabulous resolution. And I said, well, you know, that's great, but what are you showing here? And they explained to me that they were showing this broadband over power line technology, and they showed me the back of the computer, and there was no internet cable, there was no connection to the net. All there was a plug into an outlet. So they were literally streaming an entire movie over power lines. So, yes, absolutely. This may be one of the ways that the industry can get their dream, which is our refrigerators, our medicine cabinets, our kitchens, our doorways, all to be equipped with RFID readers.
You're opposed to supermarkets giving us these little shopper cards, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you know, George, it's just like the Social Security number and the barcode. It's a precursor. What those cards did was very relevant to what we're talking about here. The card created by getting everybody to stand in line and scan a card to ID themselves in their food purchases, it created an environment where two things happened. One, people became comfortable with the idea that these big companies would know what they're buying. And that was a big shift. That's been a huge change. But, you know, it's permeated society now. People are comfortable, or at least they think they're comfortable, with these companies collecting databases of their purchases. More importantly, though, perhaps, is that those cards created the infrastructure to be able to identify and authenticate people when they make purchases in real time right at the cash register. So when you scan that card, right then on the spot, someone is looking up your information and storing information about you. In some cases, that's happening many states away. It's happening through satellite uplinks. It's happening through these very sophisticated high-speed computers that we call cash registers. And what I think could happen down the road, especially if we move to this fair tax or the national sales tax, terrible idea. Because what you can do, if you have national sales tax, it actually means that you have to verify that people are paying the appropriate tax right when they make the purchase. And I don't know if you know this, but the argument against the fair tax is that it's regressive against the poor people.
Yeah, but they were going to give them some kind of refund or rebate later with a check.
Well, I'll tell you a much easier way to do that is you create a system where you charge different people different tax rates right at the cash register. We now have the technology to do it. Bill Gates walks in and buys a $10 item, pays $100 for it. Welfare mom walks in, buys a $10 item, and pays $10 for it. We have the ability, if you can authenticate and identify yourself at the cash register, to, in real time, identify you and set your tax rate.
Doesn't that fall, though, right into what you're concerned about?
Well, absolutely, because, again, the infrastructure is in place to enable a system anywhere on the globe using satellites and cell phone technology, using all of this, anywhere on the planet that you make a purchase. It is now possible, if they put the pieces together, to say, I need to verify information about you, have your unique ID number, and if you can't provide that, then I simply won't sell you the product.
I mean, I love a use tax or a sales tax like that, because it gives you 100% use of your own money. If you want to buy something and you pay the higher tax for it, so be it. If you don't want to buy it, you don't buy it.
Well, don't be so fast there, George, because when I really think about this tax, you'll see this. I'll make a prediction here. The argument around this tax is going to be boiled down to one simple thing, and that's that it's regressive against the poor. And once they boil it down to that simple argument, then the magic solution is going to present itself, and it's going to be the use of this at the point of sale, at the cash register, real-time calculation of sales tax rates. Now, here's why that's a huge problem for a privacy perspective in a world with RFID. Let's say that you are Bill Gates, or you're a person who pays a huge tax rate. You would have an incentive to ask someone with a lower tax rate to make your purchases for you. However, what the industry wants to do is link in your purchase information right into the tag on the product itself. So in a way, it would be a form, the RFID tag would be a form of determining whether the tax has been paid on the item or not. So let's say you're Bill Gates and you get audited. An audit now would mean going through your home and scanning the items to ensure that the proper tax rate had been paid.
Hmm.
And if it could be shown that you hadn't paid the tax or that someone else had paid the tax, you could have a problem. So now think about all the energy that the IRS invests today in investigating people and in keeping tabs on what people do and what they earn and where they work. Imagine that entire infrastructure and all of that money and resources devoted to instead making sure that people were paying the right tax rate when they made purchases.
Well, they've got to come up with something, but I mean, I think anything's better than what we have now.
Well, I agree, but I think that that a lot of the antagonism people feel towards the income tax, which I fully agree with you, is a terrible thing, will be used as an impetus to get this other system put in place. And if you have a system where the only way you can prove you've paid the tax is through an RFID tag on your belongings, then you have to keep those tags live. And not only that, but you have to have your identity encoded onto the tag. Very serious privacy concerns down the road. Well, you know, time will tell what happens. But if you see this argument getting boiled down to it's regressive against the poor, we need unique tax rates to be calculated right at the cash register, think about that for a minute. That means no more paying cash. That means you would have to ID yourself to make your purchase to prove your tax rate. And it means essentially the end of anonymous purchasing, means the end of anonymous cash. And it essentially means that RFID tags would then be mandatory on items because you would need the RFID tag to verify that the tax had been properly paid.
Maybe that'll be the hook to get us, Catherine.
Well, yeah.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls when we come back. We've got an update coming from Richard C. Hoagland on the Discovery as they are fueling Discovery, getting it ready for its launch in just a few more hours. So Richard C. will give us an update on that. EnterpriseMission.com. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if all goes planned, they're going to launch the Space Shuttle Discovery in a little more than 6 hours. We have Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com. He will give us an update on how things are going with the fuel sensor system and some other issues as well. Hi, Richard. How's it going out there?
Good morning, George.
Good.
Well, the Cape is very quiet, but listening to Catherine, I'm terrified.
I know that.
They started fueling this thing this morning just when you went on the air and putting the liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, which are these super chilled fluids that are required to burn to get the shuttle into orbit. And about half an hour after they started, about 11:30 my time, they did a fuel sensor check, and all 8 sensors are absolutely A-okay.
All of a sudden, it started working again.
This is the weirdest gremlin thing. It's like when your car is going squeak, 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 and you take it into the shop, and you say to the mechanic, it goes squeak, 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 and he turns it on, and it purrs
yeah.
like a kitten.
And you try to explain to him what went wrong, and you yep. just can't find it.
It's the same damn problem. Anyway, there are a lot of interesting things about this mission. This is make or break for NASA. If this thing doesn't work in the 12-day mission to the space station, then the U.S. space program for a long time is over. And that's why everyone's attention all over the world is riveted. And while I'm sitting up tonight watching with one eye my monitor here, live satellite link from the Cape, looking at NASA, listening to Jessica Reyes talk about the various, you know, countdown points, listening to you and Catherine on the other, you know, end of the desk, and watching to see what's going to happen. Now, what's remarkable is that, you know, they delayed this from a launch on the 13th, right?
Right.
Because of this fuel sensor problem.
Right.
If they had not delayed, they would have launched, I forget what the exact time was, but it was sometime in the late morning. The launch now is 10:39 a.m. tomorrow morning, Eastern Daylight Time,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
That turns out to be the exact time, I mean the exact time to the second, that Columbia, the ill-fated mission, 2.5 years ago, was launched back in January of 2003.
Oh, that's strange.
Isn't that weird?
That is strange. Let me ask you one thing, too. If this works, do you think they can then have another mission and fix the Hubble with parts we've already owned and paid for?
Okay, we've got a heads up on that. There was a vote in the House a couple days ago where they mandate that this year's budget be used in part to fix the Hubble. And Griffin, the new administrator, the guy who took my job, the one that you wanted me to have, he, as soon as he came into office, into the chair, he basically sent a team at Goddard to work, even before this return-to-flight mission, preparing everything that will be needed to take the shuttles up and fix the Hubble with astronauts. So that's one of the real big things that this mission is dependent upon, is if it works, we will probably have a service mission to Hubble, and the most interesting and important and valuable scientific tool in modern history will get repaired.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed, Richard. If this does launch, if Discovery goes, let's get a quick update from you on our next program, okay?
Okay, and I have one thing to add.
Yeah.
If Matt Drudge is still listening, would he please ask NASA about Deep Impact?
Okay, good point. Thanks, Richard.
Sorry.
Okay, that's Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com. Back in a moment, your phone calls and Catherine Albrecht on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine, do you envision the day where someone will just take a whole group of items from a supermarket, wheel it right up to a scanner, and in one quick pop, it's all done, and you've paid for it with the little chip in your hand, and off you go in 5 seconds?
Well, that's IBM's image. They've got an ad to that effect where a guy stuffs things into his overcoat and then just waltzes through the door, and the security guard runs after him to hand him his receipt. So definitely the industry certainly envisions that. And in fact, that's the killer app that they hope will get people to sign on to this, because they think that by promising to save you, 20 seconds or a minute in the checkout line, that they can get you to agree to having your every belonging tagged and tracked.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
This is Brian calling from Minneapolis. Hey, great show this evening. Very informative and a lot of good information, a lot of very good information. I just have a kind of a question and a comment. I'm kind of very ambivalent towards the whole RFID chips for, I'm very for it for the terms of kind of the supply chain, because, it kind of helps and saves time and, can increase revenue, so to speak. But I guess what I'm curious about is, you made a comment earlier, kind of a joke with the if the chip was into a sole of a shoe, let's say. Now, if you take that out of there, I guess this question is for Catherine now. If you take the chip out and, let's say throw it in the garbage can, or how you were talking earlier about how they would go in the microwave and they actually start on fire, if you were to, damage it in some sort of way, saying that they go as far as implementing them into bodies, the government, theoretically then it wouldn't be trackable anymore. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that's the idea. But if you need the chip implant in order to go to the doctor or in order to buy your groceries at Walmart, then disabling it is going to put you in a world of hurt.
So, you know, it's the same as the caller who asked, can't I just microwave or zap the chips in my cash? Well, sure you can, but then your cash is worthless to you.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess, and that brings you to the next question, which, you know, would Christians be able to go underground or somehow get off the grid or somehow disable their purchases? And, you know, even if you've got, I mean, take a science fiction type scenario, you've got Christians living in some community out in caves, I don't know. For them to be supplied with anything from the modern world, if those things are trackable, the person delivering it to them is going to, you know, you see a car leave the city with a bunch of things in the trunk, and then it comes back without those things, or those things are no longer accounted for, that's going to raise red flags. So once everything becomes trackable, then any anomalies or blips on the screen or things vanishing off the map are gonna bring in the attention of the authorities.
Right.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. Why would you say cave? Now, you know I broadcast out of a cave in St. Louis, don't you? West of the Rockies. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, very interesting, George. This is Jim in Shelton, Washington.
Did you feel the little rumble from Montana today, by any chance?
No.
They had a 5.6 a few hours ago.
Really? What part of Montana?
Western.
Yellowstone?
Not quite, but up that way.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Just a couple of comments. Bart interviewed a guy by the name of Benjamin Barak. This is in regards to the Mark of the Beast. And this guy wrote a book called The Day of the Lord is at Hand. And in the book, he says in 1979, he interviewed an IBM executive. And he asked this executive about, let me read it here. It says, I have learned independent sources that your company, IBM, is developing an infrared laser tattoo device to imprint a laser tattoo on the hand or the forehead of every person. And the executive says, that's old hat, that's old news. And he went on to say that, IBM has this stuff since before 1979. And they've got this stuff warehoused in Europe and the United States. And I thought that was very interesting. He went on to say that the number 666, he thought, would be using the numbers of 1 to 6. They would be in 6 groups with 6 numbers in each group. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, Jim, if I could jump in there on the 666.
Yeah, sure.
It's important when you read that passage to realize it was originally written in Greek. And they have a different way of representing numbers than we do. When we want to say 666, we use the digit 6, and we put it in, you know, depending on where it's placed in the, you know, the ones place, the tens place, or the hundreds place determines its meaning. In Greek, however, they have actually different numbers. 600 is its own symbol, 60 is its own symbol, and 6 is its own symbol. So I put that out there only because, you know, some people said, oh, it's in the barcode and a group of 3 sixes. But according to the Bible, it's actually pretty clear that they're looking at 666. We don't know what that means in the same way that Isaac Newton and all of the scholars from the past couldn't figure out how you could use a number to buy and sell. My guess is that when the time comes, that 666 will be very apparent. And in fact, George, you know how we were laughing about how they call these companies alien and they come out with a mark and they trademark it. It wouldn't surprise me if they just stamped a 666 right on the front of it to be cute.
Yeah, they would.
So, you know, we may well be looking at exactly that.
Thinking, I've also heard 616 is the number. It's not 666.
Yeah, you know, they uncovered some early versions of the Bible, and there are some scholars saying that we may have had it wrong all this time. It may actually be 616, according to how it was transcribed in those versions, that may have gotten mixed around. So I think the bottom line, though, is that, you know, that what the number is, I think, probably matters slightly less right now
than what it
you
is.
Know, if somebody wants to put a number or a mark in your hand or your forehead to buy or sell, you got to say no.
Good point. First time caller line. Where might you be?
Yes. Hey, this is Trevor, security officer out of Lilburn, Georgia.
Hi, Trevor.
And I just got to tell you, thanks for the show, Georgia. You keep me up all night, and that's always appreciated.
No problem. Thanks.
But I guess I've just really been fascinated, Catherine, with the information you provided tonight. I was wondering how much you knew about the European Union and their attempts to standardize the currency over there. I know there's a parliament out of the European Union, and it holds 685 seats. And actually, I think it's 685. I read an interesting article about it the other day and how the only vacant seat within that house, you can imagine the number, is 666. So I thought that was some interesting information. I don't know if you knew about that or not.
No, I wasn't familiar with that, although I'm amazed at how many places that number comes up. I guess it's like anything you look for, you can start to see it everywhere.
Well, right, yeah. And the Emperor Nero, actually, in the Greek, his name computes out to 666. So that number seems to be a recurring figure throughout the history of the church. And I was also going to ask you a question about if you have any opinions on the actual figure of the Antichrist and where we might see that fulfillment.
Well, you know, the Bible is very clear that even Christ himself, you know, the Son himself does not know the hour or the day. So I want to clarify that we don't know when this is going to happen. You know, it could be in our lifetimes. It could be not for, you know, much time to come. All we know is that all of the pieces seem to be falling into place to make it possible, even when it does come about. You know, so I think there's a lot of things that we don't know. We don't really know the form that these things will take. And I've actually got a book right here on my desk in front of me. It's a very scholarly tome called The Contribution of British Writers Between 1560 and 1830 to the Interpretation of Revelation 13, verses 16 through 18. Now, that big mouthful refers to a book that's hundreds of pages of tiny type, looking at one specific place, Britain, between 1560 and 1830, with hundreds, literally hundreds of attempts to interpret that passage. And all of them failed. Not a single one talked about a microchip. Not a single one talked about credit cards. Not a single one understood the satellite systems, the point of sale terminals, the huge databases, the computers. None of it. And that's the other thing the Bible's very clear on, is we will not know until the time is at hand. So there are pieces in there that are still mysterious but still don't make sense to us. And I think that rather than spend our time, you know, trying to figure them out, maybe what we need to do is look at the pieces that we do know. And I think the answer for Christians at this point in time is prayer. I mean, there's really nothing we can do to brace ourselves against this. The Bible makes it very clear it's coming. I know that my constant prayer is, God, you know, use me to help get the word out. Use me to do your will. And if that, you know, if that means I've got this Harvard doctorate I'm working on, I have research skills, put me to work. Let me get out there and find the information and give me a platform, you know, thanks to folks like George who have me on programs like this, to simply tell people. And then to encourage people to tell your children and tell your children to tell their children. But we need to be prepared, whether it comes tomorrow or in 100 years or in 1,000 years. We Christians have to always be prepared, because ultimately, I mean, this is the one thing. There's two things the Bible absolutely forbids you to do that are unforgivable. And one of them is blaspheming the Holy Spirit, and the other one is taking the mark of the beast. And if you do it, that's it. It's over, folks.
So how about next June, Catherine? June 6th, and the year is 2006, so 666. Maybe it's a date they're telling us about.
Well, there's no way for us to know, but I bet you when it comes, it's going to be as clear as glass. I mean, it's going to be as clear as today. You know, number to buy and sell, well, that's a credit card. There's no mystery there. What are you talking about mystery? But I'll tell you, these people spent thousands of hours trying to unravel that mystery. And here, they would have given anything to live today and to know what we take for granted. That number to buy and sell is simply a credit card or a numbered account. What's the big deal? I believe that in the future, when this number comes, the 666, we'll be in the same boat. People go, oh, of course it's that. What are you telling me? That's unbiblical prophecy. Everybody knows it. You know, it's funny how before people know it, it's a mystery, and after they know it, it's old hat. And you know, a lot of people want to dismiss the fact that this was all predicted 2,000 years ago before anybody could have known it.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, yes. Good morning, George.
Hi.
I just had a really quick question regarding all of the companies who may have been involved in this. And one of the companies that I have been watching for a while but seemed to disappear in the news since probably 97 was the Guardian Angel Company, who kind of, as far as I know, launched all of this and was someone involved with the Homeland Security, but then kind of quietly went away. And I was just wondering if they're just under a new name or under a new guise, because for the longest time, that was the company a lot of us were watching, was the Guardian Angel Chip Company.
Might you be thinking about the company called Digital Angel? Does that sound
Digital Angel, I'm okay. Sorry, yes.
Digital Angel has, they are involved with the Verichip company that Tommy Thompson just joined their board. All of those companies were associated with the animal tagging that of course people are tagging their
and pets.
And they've all been pretty much spin-offs from that. So, yeah, the Verichip and Digital Angel companies are pretty much one and the same.
Tell us a little bit about the book that's coming out.
Well, my co-author, Liz McIntyre, and I have spent the last, essentially, 3 years of our lives combing all of this research. It all comes together in a book that I believe will make people's hair stand on end and will probably change the terms of this debate. In it, we uncover documentation in their own words from some of the biggest, most famous companies on the planet, from government officials and from others, talking about their plans to essentially rig the whole world with these devices and exactly in detail how they plan to use it to monitor our movements, to monitor our shopping, to monitor us, our behavior in our homes. It's available right now at Amazon.com. There's a link on our website at spychips.com. It's available for a limited time on that website at a 34% discount.
What is it called?
It's called Spy Chips.
Oh, it's also called the name of the website.
It's called Spy Chips, so you can find it right there on Amazon. And I also realized, George, for one of the reasons I love going on your program is I get such wonderful email from your listeners. And I realized in looking at one of these emails, someone said, you know, I'm going to get copies of this, and I want to tell people all about it. We've got a video called On the Brink of the Mark that is a really wonderful overview to all of this information.
That's new, huh?
Well, that's actually, I talked about that the last time I was in your program. There are now two new videos out since then for people who ordered the first one who want an update. But for people who don't have any of that, if you want to share this information with your friends, whether they're Christians or non-Christians, that video, I think, has really served as a wake-up call for a lot of people. There are operators, I've been told, working at this crazy hour of the night at 1-800-END-TIME, that's END, T-I-M-E, and for a $20 donation to their fabulous ministry, they'll send you a copy of any one of the four tapes that I have available.
All
and
right.
That's also up on our website at spychips.com.
1-800-END-TIME. Nice, fitting phone number, Catherine. You never
what, one final thing, George, I got to tell you. That for you folks in California, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire, in each of those three states, there is legislation that has been introduced on RFID that is consumer protective. In California, there's a legislation that would make it illegal for the government to slip RFID tags into government ID documents, school IDs, and driver's licenses and such.
Probably without your knowing?
Well, either without or with. It would make it illegal for them to do it altogether.
We'll see if that one works. Catherine, thanks so much.
Thanks, George. It's a pleasure being on your program.
Indeed. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasori and Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition as we talk a little bit about Edgar Cayce. What did he really mean when he said the coastlines of the United States would be very, very small? Be safe, everyone.